And a great welcome to you. This is Andrew Horowitz, your host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We are all the way at episode 28, plenty more to come. I'm glad that you're with me today because we have a topic that's a little bit off the beaten path, quite different than you may expect, but still really fits in the formula for what we would consider disciplined investing. Because as disciplined investors, we are faced with many different opportunities. There's always somebody coming out of the woodworks from somewhere with a great tip, an idea, something that's really going to make some money, 30, 40, 50% returns. And what we're going to talk about today fits right into that area of, hey, is it too good to be true? Because, you know, as the adage says, usually when it seems to be too good to be true, it really is. This particular topic that we're going to talk about that I have called the coming death of the insurance industry is all about how the opportunity to make money from the death of seniors is right in front of us just by buying insurance on a senior. Promoters are going out there and finding seniors 75 years old or older and going out and funding some extraordinary levels of life insurance on their lives. And essentially what happens is that in a few years, they are the beneficiaries and will collect on the insurance. Now, that may seem all fair and well if everybody's cooperating with it. In fact, it's gone so far as the seniors are profiting themselves. They're making money on these deals as well. But the question has to be asked, and I think it's a very significant point, what does that mean to the insurance industry and who's going to be the last one kind of holding the bag when in fact this whole thing blows apart? Because it's going to. It really is. With that in mind, I went out and got a great guest who I think is going to really help us out on this subject. His name is Steven Leinberg, and he is really one of the great guys and experts on this particular subject and life insurance in general. And he's going to be talking with me because I have a lot of questions to ask him. I'm really going to try to understand this and give you some information of what this is, really what I think is a fascinating topic. And you can follow along with this. I wrote a post, a pretty lengthy article, a research piece on the site at www.thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can follow along and find out all the information and the companies that are associated with this. Of course, you can find that and many other pieces of information all the time because I do quite a bit of writing and quite a bit of research for you. And, write it down and have it available. But you can go there at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and there's an article called The Coming Death of the Insurance Industry, and, it discusses this in length, and we're going to really expand on that. So with that, I also want to mention to you that we're going to be taking the next call. We have Lizanne Saunders coming on. I'm going to interview her. She is the head of research for investments for Schwab, Charles Schwab and Company, and I'm going to interview her and talk with her about really what's happening in this market and where do we need to be situated and where should we be really investing these days and get her opinion on that. That's coming up, but today we're going to be talking about the insurance issue and really kind of focusing on that. The last thing I want to mention before we get into this discussion, which we'll start right in a moment, is that just to let you know that at Amazon, we are moving up the bestseller list, which is really nice to know. And thank you for that. On the site at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, you can, in fact, buy books right now, The Disciplined Investor. And I would encourage you, this is something that I do, this podcast, obviously, it's something I enjoy doing. But at the same time, it's something that I do to help out a lot of people. One of the things I also did was write the book to help you out, understand about investments, understand about the core disciplines about investing. What I'd like you to do, and, I don't know, maybe it's like payment for a movie, maybe, payment for the series, $14.95 gets you a book. I'd like you to go to the site. I'd like you to buy a copy. I'd like you to read it. I'd like you to comment back to me and tell me what you thought. I think you're going to, for the price of that admission to that book, I think, you're really going to find that a tremendous amount of information and ways in which you can make money. That's what I tried to accomplish in the book, understanding investments and at the same time, making money for you. Combine that with what we're talking about in this podcast and these discussions, and you have a great recipe for really, really great opportunities for successful investing. Because I sense that you are probably listening to this particular program. You have it on your iPod, on your computer. You have it downloading all the time because you want to understand the environment of investing. What better way from the book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success? Go over and get yourself a copy today. I'd really appreciate it. With that in mind, we're going to get on with this discussion of life insurance. It's going to be a fun one, I think. I think this is going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to speaking with him. And when we get back, we'll get on the phone with Steve Leinberg. And we're going to talk about the whole idea of buying insurance on individuals we don't even know, profiting from it, and the eventual death of the insurance industry on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
And as promised, we are here with Steve Leinberg, who is an expert in the area of insurance. And Steve, let me give you a quick update on who he is. He is the CEO of Leinberg and LeClaire, an estate financial planning software company, and president of Leinberg Associates, a publishing and software company. He's written many, many books. I've read a couple of them and actually studied many of those as I was taking my various courses to become a certified financial planner. And he was also part of an article, the Business Week article that I've referenced in this discussion with Matt Goldstein, talking about death bonds. So welcome today, Steve.
Thank you very much.
You know, I wanted to ask a couple of questions. You know, this whole area of stranger-owned life insurance, you know, that's what we're really talking about today. And in my opinion, you know, in this article that I wrote called The Death of the Insurance Industry, you know, I see some real problems in the future in this area. But, you know, we talk about these moral hazards, we talk about it, some fraud and all that. Can you give me your take on this whole, first of all, you know, what's going on and what's happening with it all right now and what your take is on it?
Well, stranger-owned life insurance or investor-initiated life insurance or SPIN life, there are lots of names, is a virus that is rapidly mutating and getting out of hand. It originally started focusing on ultra-wealthy people, but when the low-lying fruit was picked, the promoters went to other places, and they will send you a note that says you can get $50,000 of free insurance. And when you read the fine print, you find out that $35,000 of that is going to some unnamed investors, people that are total strangers, and maybe the rest will go to your family. The bottom line of all this is that strangers will own large amounts of insurance on your life. This whole thing is just rife with fraud, with consumer fraud, with insurance fraud. The SEC is investigating several situations. This thing generates money laundering. There's all kinds of problems with it. You don't want to touch it.
Yeah. The article from Business Week, which I think was one of the first, I guess, consumer and kind of the public outcries as to what this issue is. Although I will say that my opinion of the Business Week article was more of a discussion, for the most part, the first half at least, about, you know, who it is and the hedge funds involved and the great investment opportunity the hedge funds think it is. And, you know, the article says, and I'll quote from there, there's nothing inherently wrong with life settlements, which is the idea of buying insurance from someone who wants to sell it to you because they're maybe in need of the cash for whatever reason. It says, in fact, the people who need quick cash or want to supplement their retirement nest eggs, the market can be a boon. And without it, a person looking to unload a policy would only have one choice, to sell it back to the insured or so-called for the surrender value. Now, here's the problem, that obviously when we find out that the opportunity to benefit and buy a life insurance policy on somebody and eventually get the death benefit is great potentially for an investor, especially when you do it on an elderly person. I think the issue that right now that we're really focusing on is, why is it though? Why is it that we are finding consumers are starting to spread the word with their friends, you know, in their various condos, if you will? And I mean, what is it that's so exciting to them about this?
Well, this is the classic free lunch, or at least it appears to be the classic free lunch. It appears to be a perpetual money machine. It appears to be the ultimate return on investment. It is, of course, like every other one of these things, the classic P.T. Barnum dream of finding people who are blinded by greed, who are willing to do anything to what's happened is these promoters have come to people and said, you see that Rolls Royce out there? It's yours if you sign on the dotted line. And by the way, at the end of 2 years, after you've bought a life insurance policy on your life, or ostensibly you've bought it, because we'll put up all the premiums or we'll find a place for somebody will lend you all the premiums. So you really have no investment in this thing. But at the end of 2 years, you could sell the policy. It's almost operators are standing by to buy this policy from you. Right. And they'll buy this policy from you, and you'll make all kinds of profit even after you repay this loan that you've been taking out to pay the premiums. So you haven't laid out a penny, they tell you. You get this Rolls Royce or this Lexus or this $100,000 of cash bonus for signing, going along with this thing. And then you get money at the other end, and what could be bad since you haven't laid out a nickel? Well, the problem, of course, is that it all starts with a lie. And the lie is you have to tell the insurance company, A, that I have all this wealth, which half the time the people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
B, the big lie is I'm buying it for my wife and children.
Mm.
I'm buying it for my family. I'm buying it out of love for other people. The truth is you're buying it, and you knew from the get-go, and the promoters knew from the get-go, and everybody involved knew from the get-go, this whole thing was a scam on the insurance company, that you're really buying it to put it into the hands of strangers.
Right, because
you've lied to the insurance company.
On the applications these days, what you'll notice is, and I'm sure you're aware, is that there's a new question that hadn't been there, let's say, 5 years ago, and that is, do you plan on, have you discussed, or have you ever really discussed this whole idea of either taking a loan out to buy this policy, or eventually you talked about selling it? And
there's a whole series of questions just like that.
So how are individuals getting around that now to do this?
Because they're being coached. Mm-hmm. They're being, number one, they're being coached. They're being told what to say, what not to say. People realize that if they answer honestly, the insurance company is not going to issue the insurance. So they either omit facts, they lie, they fudge the truth. Now, obviously, these insurance companies are not dumb. They have filters. They find out these things. They do post-issuance investigations. They're going to find out, and this is insurance fraud.
Yep.
And in every single state in this country, insurance fraud is either a serious misdemeanor or it's an F-E-L-O-N-Y. It's a felony.
Mm.
And in many cases, a felony is punishable by jail time.
Jail time. Here's what's interesting. I can tell you some stories, and I think you and I have talked about this briefly, but I know personally I have seen someone who had the desire to do this. You know, what happened was, and here's the quick story, which is the same as all, right? Their friend says, hey, you know what? You can go to this guy and he's going to give you $100,000. You stand in for the medical. You sign a bunch of papers and that's it. 2 years later, you get your money out of this trust that they set up for you. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he showed it to me. And I said, wait a minute. Your application shows your financial state is your net worth is over $5 million. Yeah. Well, I said, it's not. It's like $1 million. Well, you know what? They said we can do that. I said, who said you could do that? Well, the insurance guy. He said, this is how it is, and they're going to actually work on developing a financial statement that shows that we have this net worth. I said, oh. And then what else? Well, what about these questions that talk about, are you going to sell the policy? Well, we're just going to put no. Why? Well, nobody checks. You know, they told us to put that there. Don't worry. I said, you must be kidding me. And again, the end result was that this party got right up to about $100,000 because the insurance agent was able to write a $5 million policy on their life. And right now is the 2 years is up at this point. They started taking out the money. The big question is the taxability on the back end, because they were told, by the way, there was no taxes on this, as a side note, which we knew wasn't true. And the insurance agent collected, you know, the premium was like $300,000 a year. So the insurance agent collected somewhere in the neighborhood about $180,000 to $200,000 commission. The person or the parties that were advancing the premiums for this to loan the money were getting 13% per year. And now the problem is, when we talk about the back end, just like with the subprime mess where all of a sudden you can't sell these houses, these policies are questionably sellable because they're tainted, right?
Well, that's absolutely correct. In fact, the SEC is investigating a hedge fund that did exactly that. And what they did is they didn't sell the policies. They had the policies in trust, and they sold interest in the trust so the insurance company wouldn't find out. Well, when the SEC found out about this, they said, you know, all these policies are worthless. That's the sole asset of your hedge fund. Your hedge fund is worthless. You've defrauded all these investors.
So what happens? What happens to the person who was the stand-in insured?
Well, that he, of course, is engaged in insurance fraud. Hmm. The policy is going to be rescinded by the insurance company. So he gets nothing. His family gets nothing. He may have to spend time in jail. It's a mess.
You know, the thing that always concerned me, too, is let's assume that everybody looks the other way and, you know, they get by with this. But then sometime in the future, because there is this 2-year contestability or incontestability period. But my understanding is you're the expert in this area that does not count if it was a fraudulent transaction. Is that true?
Well, first of all, that's irrelevant. The 2-year, this is a very big myth that the promoters of this thing would like you to believe. The 2-year contestable period provides that if you've got a policy, but you got that policy through fraud, the insurance company is sealed off. They can't touch you after 2 years. However, if you never had insurable interest, you never had a contract, and if you never had a contract, the clause inside the policy is not going to protect you. In other words, in most states, you will not be protected from legal problems because of that two-year contestable period.
And insurable interest means that if like, for example, if I buy insurance for my family, the insurable interest is that my family would require would be dependent on me financially, and therefore the insurance covers me. Whereas if somebody else, some Joe Smith buys a policy on me, there is no financial need involved there, aside from the greed factor of it, and the insurable interest is then questionable.
Exactly. In other words, insurable interest means you have a greater interest in the continuation of the life insured than you do in this person dying. With stranger-owned life insurance, they have just the opposite. This person or this group of people who you've never met in your life has every interest in you dying. And in fact, the sooner you die, the more they profit.
Mm-hmm.
Is exactly why we have these insurable interest laws, to prevent that thing.
That's what I never understood. I just never understood how they got around this insurable interest discussion. I mean, they're fancy. They do a good job with the lawyers, I guess.
Well, they pretend that you took the policy out. But what I like to say is this. If you're a 16-year-old kid standing on opposite the liquor store and you see this guy walking by and you say to him, here's a $20 bill, go in and buy the liquor. Who really bought the liquor for? Is it the guy or the 16-year-old kid? Now, the 16-year-old kid was doing something the law does not allow him to do.
Right.
So the promoters of this thing say, well, the insured's allowed to buy insurance on his own life, and then he could do whatever he wants. That's true if he, in fact, is really buying it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
But in this stranger-owned life insurance, the truth is an investor initiates it. An investor intends to own it, and everybody knows that. You're evading the law. You're violating the insurable interest laws.
Right. When we get back, we're going to talk to Steve Lineberg just to follow up and to clean up the issue of who does this hurt, where is this going, and what's the fallout could be. Stick around on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Stay around for 1 second. We'll just hang on. All right, we're back in this discussion of, you know, stranger-owned life insurance and the discussion of what's going to happen, as I term it, the death of the insurance industry. And we're here with Steven Lineberg, who is an expert on this area. And here's what I want to talk about. So we talked about in the last segment this whole idea of, you know, it's fraud and it's potentially going to be an unwinding process. There, I know personally, and there are we're based in Florida, which probably, as usual, is one of the hot spots for this, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's always a hot spot for something.
Well, you don't have an anti-rebate law, which means that people are giving away trips. They're saying, come on my boat, we'll take you for a trip. They ply these older people with liquor, with all kinds of favors, and they can promise almost anything. The problem is it's a scam.
Yeah, it is.
It's so illegal.
One of the things, and you don't have to necessarily, I know you're very involved with the insurance industry, obviously, and I, you know, some of my quote-unquote best friends are insurance agents.
Well, let me just say this. I am not an insurance agent.
Right.
I do not work for any insurance company. I have three companies of my own, none of which sell insurance or involved in or insurance or life settlements for that matter. What I'm saying to people is this is information you need to know. You're selling away your life. Once investors get the policy on your life, no matter how much your family or your business needs new coverage, you may never be able to get more coverage or replace what's gone.
Right,
so
right.
It's bad for you.
So if
this is such a great deal for investors, why isn't it even a better deal for your family?
Right.
I mean, if you really need insurance, why not buy it and keep it for your family rather than having it go to strangers?
Right. Well, here's a scenario that I want to build for you now. The next issue of who does it hurt. So here, insurance is usually built, and when you look at the actuarial process, it's built on a few things. Obviously, assumed life expectancy, right? That's a big part of it. Expenditures by the insurance company, as well as the fact that they always put in a number for how many policies will lapse or aren't going to actually go to death or be paid out. So how many death benefits will not be paid out, and therefore they can do an actuarial guess or at least a determination of what is going to be their expenditures into the future. Is that safe to say?
That is correct.
Okay.
Mortality, interest, loading are the three technical terms, but they add this factor, assuming actuarially that some people will keep their policy, some people will not. And mm-hmm. when they create a price for the policy, they add that in.
Right, so
in some cases, they've been overly generous about that and assume more people will drop their policies then. But that resulted in a cheaper premium.
Mm-hmm.
Now the companies are finding out, well, these guys are playing this con game on us. Therefore, they're not dropping the policy. Therefore, we're losing some money here. We have to raise our rates. And that's exactly what the insurance companies have done. And one of the fallouts of this whole thing is that older people, people in their late 60s, 70s, and 80s, have to pay 15 to 20% more in premiums because these scams are being run.
Well, let's kind of take this to its most horrible conclusion, at least from what I'm looking at. And I'm not really trying to do a henny penny on anybody, but follow me here. So now if we have built these policies on the fact that there's a certain amount are going to lapse and a certain amount of policy will be written and the law of large numbers and all the things that you teach and that we know about on life insurance from Life Insurance 101, the first issue is, number one, there is more insurance being written in such large numbers than ever before on elderly people, because what they're doing is trying to push the envelope to get the most of insurance you can on through these scams, right? I mean, it's not, you're not trying to get the least, you're trying to get the most.
There are a lot of scams, right? But there are a lot of legitimate reasons that older people are buying life insurance in larger amounts.
Absolutely. But I'm talking about here, I mean, we're really talking about big numbers compared to what it was, because once you shut this down, it changes. I mean, there's just a lot. The second thing is, under these scenarios, if they're allowed to continue, they don't lapse, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so
that
now
we just, the investors hold it until you die, until you hoping die. That you die as soon as possible.
Right, exactly. And it kind of conjures up that picture of, you know, guys waiting by TV. Okay, who's still alive? Who's not? Who's on a ventilator? Who's not? You know, what's going on?
Well, they are disappointed when you answer the phone. Right. But the truth is, there is no state regulation about who can end up buying this policy on your life. And so the company that originally buys it, let's assume they're perfectly legitimate, they could turn around and say, we're not making enough profits, people are not dying fast enough, let's sell our block of business or let's sell these policies. And by the third round, who owns the policy on your life? You right. have no clue who owns it, yep. And you have no control over who owns it. And there is no state or federal agency watching over who owns it. How do you know that Tony Soprano doesn't own it?
Right. Yeah, I hear you. But so taking that to the logical conclusion, which I know is, again, very far-fetched, but if we break down the fact that there's, you know, a tremendous amount of insurance being written, the actuarial assumptions that were put into place a few years ago, not put into place, but have been in place a few years ago, if you take it to its logical and elongated long-term situation, what will happen is, if this continues on, you could break the backs of some of these insurance companies. Or on the other hand, what will happen is the break the backs of individuals not allowing them to have insurance because it's so, you know, prohibitively expensive, or that turns around being the same situation. I mean, really, if this continues, this could hurt insurance companies.
I think that it certainly has already resulted in increased premiums. It has already resulted in some companies saying, we're just not going to take those risks because we don't feel that you're being truthful with us. I don't think it's going to bankrupt any insurance companies, but it certainly, in the short run, will hurt their profits because they made one assumption when they created the premium, and somebody played a game on them, and of course those assumptions are not going to come through.
Right. Yep.
But in the long run, they'll just raise their rates for everybody, and all the public will suffer because of these games.
Yeah, what else is new? I mean, it's just the same thing over and over. That the end, the guys holding the bag in the end are going to be it's going to be the public, obviously. But the other thing that is really a big concern of mine is the insurance agents that are participating in this, and there are some that have taken their entire business plan and doing this because most people don't realize the commission on a whole life policy and policies that are being utilized in this kind of scheme, you know, somewhere in the 50 to 70, 80% range it could be.
And well, it's not only that, but they're going to turn around 2 years later and they're going to broker the same policy and get a 20 or 30% piece of the action on that.
Right.
So they're double dipping.
Right. And then, you know, what happens to those guys? You know, you put the clamps on it today and you turn off all gone.
They'll be long gone by the time you figure out what's happened.
Right. And the money that they've made is astonishing.
Well, it's greed.
Yeah.
It's greed on every level. It's if you are the insured, you are being greedy. If you are the agent, the broker involved in this thing, you are being greedy. If you are the investors, you are being greedy because it's buying insurance on somebody's life. You know, we would laugh if somebody came to you and said, I know you have a building there. I'd like to give you the money to buy insurance on the building, but 2 years from now, I want to buy that insurance from you. So I'll own the insurance, the fire insurance on your building.
Right.
And you would say, what are you, crazy? I'm mm-hmm. not going to let you own fire insurance on my building. Mm-hmm. But people are doing the same thing here with their own lives.
Right.
It's crazy.
Well, let me just switch gears because obviously I'm going to kind of try to, for my listeners, come up with the companies that, you know, may have a problem with this once the announcement really comes out, once people start realizing what's happening, because stockholders are not going to be happy when they really see some of this being, you know, if the SEC comes down on some of these companies. And I want to make sure that people are aware of that. But I have another question for you. I've had this theory for many years that the life insurance business with the 50, 60, 70% commissions and frankly 100% commissions if you look at the general agency process, and with the industry, you cannot have the insurance policies don't follow the agent. In other words, if you want to use another agent, oftentimes you have to cut out the commission entirely, and that's why agents come in, and then what they do is just rewrite your new policy. I'm thinking that a great scenario would be a levelized commission structure that the policy commissions follow the agent, somewhat like the health insurance industry or the automobile industry. How is that going to play out if something like that ever happened or not?
I have no idea. Yeah. Certainly, it would cut some of the incentive for some of these schemes. There are companies, I believe State Farm is one of them, that does something like that. But certainly it is greed that is driving these schemes, and it will hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, it's not very unfortunate.
I don't think it's going to bring down any insurance companies, but I do think that it's going to mean tougher laws. It's actually, this whole thing, you've been talking about hurting insurance companies. I think this whole thing is going to hurt life settlement companies even more than it hurts insurance companies. I think the laws that will come out when legislators and regulators understand what's really going on here, they will enact tougher. NCOIL, the National Conference of Insurance Legislators, the NAIC, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, they're all modifying their model acts to address these consumer abuses, these consumer frauds.
Right.
And it's going to be tougher and much more difficult for the life settlement community to survive.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for joining me today. I have a lot of more information that will be available on the show notes. There's an article on the site called The Death of the Insurance Industry that will be coming out concurrent with this podcast. I'll put a link to, of course, Stephen, to your site so people, if they're interested, can get some information there and some other information right on the show notes. Stephen Leinberg, thank you so much for joining me today.
Andy, my pleasure.
All right. See you soon. Well, that was interesting. I think that this whole area of investing in insurance, you never know what they're going to come up with next. An amazing discussion with Steve Leinberg about the real strange world of life insurance and what the effects are on people. I think that I would really appreciate some comments on the blog. There's been a lot of activity on that particular article that I wrote. I'd appreciate if you would go over there too and make some comments on that and tell me what you think about it. I'd love to know your thoughts on this. Go right to the blog and just log in and put a comment there. It's pretty easy. And of course, just another reminder and just another request. If you can go over to the website and buy a copy of the book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, that'd make me happy too. I'd really appreciate that. And I'm sure that you're going to find a lot to learn in there. And I'm giving you a great opportunity, I think, to understand investing in a different manner and really understand the core values in a way that you can really profit from it. All right, that's all we have for this episode of The Disciplined Investor. Make sure you go to the website and track the information that has been put up about this show in the show notes. And make sure to subscribe because Liz Ann Saunders is my next guest. And she is the head of research for Charles Schwab & Company. I'm sure she's going to be able to provide some amazing insight into these markets. Have a great week. Have a great investment. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for subscribing. This is Andrew Horowitz signing off the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.